You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Guests in, Don, they always remark how they love the introduction music. Maxine Nightingale. I hope the band we're about to speak to next likes the introduction.
They're just
introductory music.
They're suckholing to you. It is shithouse. That is. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that.
Stop saying things are shithouse.
Yeah, exactly, Don. And well, a bit of reverence.
I don't like it.
A bit of reverence and respect. What's your language to our guest, for a start? You don't know that he might be offended by your language, so just take it easy. Oh, now, if you've heard of Don King, haven't you?
He's the bloke with a fuzzy...
That's right.
He was boxing promoter.
Boxing promoter.
He's a bit sus, wasn't he?
Sus? Or as in what?
The way he went about doing
things.
Oh,
he was business-wise, yes. not sexually. You've heard of Billie Jean King. Do you know what her name
Billie
used to
Jean
be?
Jean King, didn't Elton John's...
Billie Jean King, she was Billie Jean Moffat. And then she changed
Philadelphia
her name.
Flyers. She was the inspiration.
She was a tennis player.
She was the inspiration for the song that John McEnroe wrote about the Philadelphia Flyers.
So you've heard of Don King, you've heard of Billie Jean King. You've heard of the King, Elvis Presley.
The Furniture King.
The Furniture King. You've heard...
Who's that, the bloke from Footscray?
I don't know.
You know that fella.
Yeah, he's making...
Franco Kotso.
Franco Kotso.
And you...
Or whatever it is.
Kotso.
Franco. And you've heard of Dr. Martin Luther King. Well, we have a man called King in, and I wonder if he had a dream. His name is Martin King, and he is the classic and iconic reporter for A Current Affair on Channel 9. I don't know how long he's been doing it. I got a feeling he's been at 9 for 35 or 40 years, odd.
I'm glad.
Not much information you can get about him because everything is confidential about Martin King.
Okay.
But he's our guest in the studio and we're very appreciative of you, Martin, coming in.
Well, I'm very glad to be here, boys. Thank you.
Now, this is going to test John Martin because he usually goes to Wikipedia and he just quotes Wikipedia. Now, you're going to test him and we'll see how good an interviewer he is off the top of his head. But I am rapt that you are in here because I've got a lot of questions to ask about the media and you're the man to answer them for me because I get frustrated with the media.
Okay.
And I hope you can
ask away.
Okay, that is good.
Ask away.
What?
Just ahead of time. Sorry,
mate. Shit is that, Don? I was just said that I couldn't find a lot about him because he is a pro. I just said that. And you're worrying about my interviewing skills, are you?
Yes, I am really worried because you plagiarised the internet.
I've plagiarised
the internet and all you're doing is quoting Wikipedia.
Of course. If you don't know about people, that's how
you
find it.
Come off the top of your head and ask a person...
Pardon us, Martin. Just one minute.
Yes, well, he lacks research.
I lack research.
I think you're in for a surprise today, Don.
Martin, could I ask you a question, please, which frustrates me no end with regard to the media?
Sure.
Martin, you break stories as media and you hold people, governments, for example, or bodies to account. If it wasn't for the media, a lot of people and organisations would get away with a lot of things. So the media do, but why don't the media follow up on what they release, you know, they release or expose whatever it is, yeah, and it makes news for a day or two or a week, but then there's no follow-up. Why don't the media follow things
through? Could you repeat that question for Martin, please?
What do you mean by no follow-up?
Well, we don't. Okay. Well, just can I just give you an example?
Yes. Let's interview you,
Don. We're going to profile Martin here, but anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you've done some great research here, Don.
We've got one with... Okay, that thing that happened out at Cranbourne with regard to the developer paying money to the councillors. Now, yes. We've heard no follow-up whatsoever. It was big news 12 months ago. Where is it at right now?
It's not topical.
It's what you're here for, Martin. Tell us.
No. This is why I want to ask you. Why don't the media follow that through? Even this I Cook Food thing that came out a couple of months ago, you know, the Sun are repeating a few things, but why aren't they pressing for an inquiry, or what's happened to the inquiry?
But this has been a long-running story, the I Cook story. Yeah. That's been a long-running story, and there's been a lot of different reports on that. I've seen a lot of updates on it.
Okay, what about the thing out of Cranbourne?
But again, that's been a long-running story as well.
But you don't follow it through. We don't know where it's at.
But who's you?
Well, I am an interested party who tries to keep up with current affairs. You release the stuff and it's terrific news at the time, but you don't do a follow-up.
Martin.
There's a lot happening in the world, Don, yeah, and there's a lot of new things happening every single day. You can't cover them all.
When I asked you to come in, Martin, I did warn you before we went on air, this is the most eccentric man. You'll never understand one of his questions. He says to me, I don't do any... Don! He has been on 35, he's got more stories than you've had hot dinners, and you're worried about stuff that went on a year ago, and why doesn't he follow it up? It's topical. He can't keep going back to stuff time after time, and people think, shit, what's this sort of show we're watching? Now, Don, when I rang him up, he said, just a minute, you'll have to ring back. I'm having a pedicure and a manicure.
What?
Martin, could I possibly ask you, surely you're not tarting yourself.
So what are your hands?
Oh, they are nice, they're glossed. Ooh.
Yeah.
They're not a manicure and pedicure.
You're having it.
Your joke. I have them with my grandchildren.
What do they call that when it's nice and, is it glossy like that? What's that called?
That's shellac.
Oh, is that like a French polish?
Please, Martin, you're not shellacking your nails, are you?
Oh, my toenails.
Holy shit, man. So you do that regularly?
Well, I was having a massage that night.
Hello?
And I wanted to present well.
To whom?
The massage therapist.
What?
Because I like my feet massaged at the end.
You're tracking square at the minute?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you? Are you regular sexually? I mean, are you going out with your... in tow with someone or not?
I have until recent times been in tow.
You don't have to answer. Just say yes or no.
I'm single. I'm single.
Thank you.
And glad for it.
And you're having massages and pedicures and manicures because
I'm a hedonist.
What?
Hedonist.
A hedonist.
Yes, Don.
Please explain.
Oh, Don.
I love hedonist. You know what a hedonist is.
Well, I thought it'd be something else.
Don has basically 10 words in the English language which he revolves around, and hedonist is not one of them.
I love pleasure.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought, but hedonist kind of referred...
Don.
Okay. No.
No, I love pleasure.
So what you do, Martin, is it a means to an end, like a vocation, or do you enjoy it?
I enjoy it.
You do you?
Yeah.
So people would find it pretty intimidating doing what you do. I know you probably do a lot of other things besides knock on people's doors and follow them down the street, but do you enjoy doing that? And there's so many questions I'll ask you just after you answer that particular question.
Look, I do enjoy it. I haven't done as many, we call them bounces, if you over the past couple of years as I have in the past. But yeah, I do enjoy it. Look, it's Sam's theatre. It's the magic of TV. It's theatre. That's what people want.
But it's pretty risky because you deal with risky. We'll get on to who you've dealt with, but you deal with some pretty people who are naturally maybe going to court or done nefarious things in the community.
Dangerous people.
And there's hostility for someone who doorstops them and puts the microphone in there. I used to cop that a little even in the pissy little stuff I used to do with street talk, people would say. Have you been threatened by various people, and you must have a thick hide just to bounce back and keep doing it?
Look, I've been threatened, I've been punched, I've been kicked, I've been spat at, I've been driven at, haven't been driven over yet.
Whilst you're actually interviewing these people.
Sam has.
I'm going to say, I got one up on you there.
Yeah.
Do you have somebody there to protect you?
Look, in the old days, if I can refer to them that way, no. And I have confronted some very dangerous people, but these days it's a different world. as we all know, and there's some very dangerous people out there. And so now, if they ask me, will you front this bloke? I'll say, what's he all about? Who is he? I want security.
Oh,
so
really?
we take security, and I've been very glad for it a couple of times.
How many people?
One, just one guy.
Just one big dude?
Yeah, one guy who can handle himself. And look, but you know what? Producing a camera, to me, is almost like I've thought about it. It's almost like pulling a shotgun on somebody. People are so shocked by it. Even the most dangerous people, you can see they take a breath, they take a step back, they have a bit of a think about it. You never know how they're going to react. Are they going to attack you? Are they going to run? Are they going to slam the door? You just don't know.
Who has scared you the most? You mightn't want to mention the name.
Look, I haven't ever been really scared except for when I was in Texas with David Koresh.
David Koresh?
Waco?
In Waco.
Yep.
And we were in his compound for 2 days. And we were told...
Really?
...by the police, don't go in there. The local Waco Herald Tribune, the editor said, don't go in there. And they both said to us, ring us when you get out each night and tell us you're okay because you're crazy. Don't go in there. And we were threatened constantly by his henchmen.
Why did he let you in the first place?
Because we rang him from Australia because yes. he was doing shocking things to families. He was having sex with young girls.
Yeah,
they
were having a person
babies.
Of interest?
He was a very, very big person of interest, and we were going to expose him. And we rang him from Australia and said, can we talk to you? And he said, yes, come over.
So,
and we went over to Texas. And we had a young girl called Nahida, young woman. She rang him and said, I'm the producer and I'd like to come across with the crew. And he said, that's fantastic. He wanted Nahida to come. When we turned up, Nahida wasn't there. He became very angry and he refused to do the interview. He said, I'm not going to talk to you. You're an ugly man. It's the first thing he said to me. And I said, well, not really, but I would like to do the interview. And he said, well... come back to the Waco Hilton at 8 o'clock tonight and prove to me you're worthy.
Did you put a dress on?
I put a dress on. We went back, and after a couple of hours, he said, "Okay, 8 o'clock in the morning, come to my compound."
You said, "Prove to me you're worthy." What did that mean?
He was a control freak, and he was a narcissist, and he decided that he wasn't going to do the interview unless it all went his way, and he wanted to see what's. He wanted to see the cut of my jib, I guess.
So that's interesting. You say you rang from Australia. The fact that he would think that you're remote from the bottom of the world, that might have captivated him where he knocks
yes.
back all the people on his doorstep from America. Have you ever rung, who would you like to ring, or have you ever rung other people from Australia and gone over and interviewed them where you thought you wouldn't get through to first base, but the fact that you're different and coming from down under, they might just accommodate you.
The fact that you're from Australia is, I don't know, it's a bit of a romantic notion or whatever, and you know, an Aussie, people love Aussies. He did as well, and we spent 2 days in the compound with him, but we were constantly threatened by all these huge bodyguards he had. You know you'll never leave here. You'll never leave here alive. You know that, don't you?
He said that to you?
No, he's henchman. He was just giving me the palaver and the usual, you know, bull dust.
So Martin, Waco was the compound where he set fire to it, or he
that's where the ATF and the FBI went in with their tanks.
That's right.
In the end, after a 51-day siege.
And how many people?
87.
87.
Yeah.
And what did you establish? Was he on about?
Well, he'd never spoken to anybody.
Yeah.
He wouldn't speak to the media. And he spoke to us because we had a woman ring him, and because he was a womanizer, I think that was our first in, if you like, and the fact that we were from Australia. So he said, yeah, he was interested. And as we all know now, a lot of people died, and almost every single person we interviewed died. And we were the only news organization in the world. I was the only journalist in the world who ever interviewed him. After I interviewed him, the Waco Herald Tribune did a five-part series. It was after their five-part series, the FBI and the ATF went in. Then they had the big siege.
Why were you spared, do you think?
Well, I don't think they were ever going to hurt us. I mean, he wanted his story told. He was an egomaniac.
What was his story?
His story was that he was the Lamb of God. He was a Lamb of God. He had a direct line to God. He used to go and stand in the middle of a paddock and look up to the heavens with his followers and speak to God. And then they would say to him, what did he say? And he'd say, well, he said this. He said, I give thee Marie. I give thee Catherine. And then he would sleep with him that night.
Was that
what he was about.
Did you sell that story, or did Channel 9 or whoever you worked for?
Channel 9 sold that story a million times.
Over worldwide?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we had 250 minutes of precious videotape back then that the whole world hadn't seen. And as soon as this happened, they said, we have to have this footage. And because when they went in there, the ATF and the FBI, a lot of people police were killed, members of the SEC were killed, and there was a 51-day siege, and the world just went crazy. They needed to have that vision that we had.
Do you research your subject, or do you just go from the top of your head? As soon as you get
I'm a very big, painstaking researcher. I research everything.
Don't.
Here's a little bit you,
Don. No, but you're getting in situations. You're interviewing a person like this. You've got to go from you've got to react to what he says. You may do your research, but still you've got to think on your feet at the time.
Absolutely. Always have to think on your feet. And during that 2 days, we knew he had a lot of weapons. And during that 2 days, I thought, I'll have a little bit of insurance here. And I said to him, what would you do? This is a year before the FBI and the ATF went in. I said, what would you do if the authorities came in here? And he said, we would defend ourselves. And I said, with what? He said, we have weapons. And I said, but what would you do if they came in? And then he just went off on this rant about how this is America, this is Texas, we have a right to defend ourselves. If they come in, yeah, there'll be a gunfight. And a year later, it all came true.
Don.
And that's what the Americans wanted, especially the big American networks, all of that that interview where he said, if they come in, we'll fight them. And that's exactly what happened.
Don, I don't think you thought that through, Don. Does he research the people he goes after? You can't just stop someone on the street and say, hello, I've been sent to speak to you. Who are you and why am I speaking to you? You've got to research who he speaks to, Don. I think Martin would do that, Don. Did you not think of that?
Well, I didn't research Martin. I am now I'm talking to Martin.
No, but you're...
And I'm reacting to what Martin says, so
you're going to doorstop someone, you've got to know why you're doorstopping him.
We probably wouldn't send you over to Waco, though, Don.
Yeah.
Why not?
You go and say, hello, what is this, the hotel, or what are you doing here, everyone?
Well, you'd get the fellow to relax, and then you'd hit him with the questions, I should imagine, or the pertinent questions.
A little bit of a backstory. We had families in Australia who had come to us and said, he has got our children and our grandchildren and we want them back and he's dangerous. That's why we did the story. And all of those people died, by the way.
So do you think the media have got an important part to play in our society for exposing things like this? Because the authorities authorities do not act at all, do they?
Who else is going to do it?
That's what I'm saying.
If the media doesn't protect the public... Who else? The police?
Well, they're not doing their job, are they? The authorities.
Yeah, people go to the police and the police say, oh, look, it's a civil matter, and people go to governments or their local member. Nothing happens. So, look, you know, we should be very thankful in this country with a strong media. Yes, you can criticise the media like you criticise the police or lawyers, but, you know, would you like to live in China or Russia? Whereas you come out and say something, they'll put you in jail.
Do you think we live in a situation in Victoria at the moment? It concerns me, you know, our political situation that we're under at the moment. Do you think we should be concerned in Victoria about where it's going as a state?
Oh, no, I think we're in a very happy place, especially with coronavirus.
Politically?
I'm not sure what you mean by that. Who have you misjudged the most? For good or for bad, when you've had to confront them? This man's person seems reasonable, or no, this person's a lot worse than I thought they'd be.
Oftentimes you will confront someone and you do get a different side to the story, and you reflect that in when you're writing a script. First and foremost, I should apologise to a bloke in Richmond, a Crim. We went into his warehouse and he was sitting in his desk and we were told by the police that just be very careful, he's got a handgun in his top drawer. and he'll go for it. So we walked in, said, I was Martin King from A Current Affair, and can we talk to you about, I forget what the issue was. He's gone straight for his top drawer, opened the top drawer. So I slammed the door shut on his fingers. I didn't mean to, but I slammed the door shut. And then he pulled his bloodied fingers from the drawer, and I'd broken three of his fingers. He said, I was just going for my cigarettes. And he had a packet of Marlboro in there. So I was very apologetic to him. But then he gave us an interview afterwards, and he was a good guy. A crim, but a good guy.
Could we mention his name?
I can't even remember his name. It was about 30 years ago, but... I didn't misjudge him, but I, you know.
So some of the colourful figures, Kath Pettingill, who is a famous underworld family, I suppose she's part of, isn't
Kath
she?
Kath Pettingill is actually an old friend of mine. She used to serve me beers.
Where at?
At the Sentimental Bloke Hotel in Bulleen when I was 15.
You're joking.
No. We used to go in every Friday night. They used to call it Fight Night. Because all the boys from West Heidelberg used to come across and misbehave.
Yeah, I know.
And Kath was the barmaid there. And I made friends with Kath then, and I've got a very good relationship with her. We stuck together over the years, and she's given me some amazing stories. And
a package turned up at 9, I believe, from her.
Nothing to do with Kath Pettingill, but a package did turn up at 9. And I'd had lunch with a very, very, very...
That was nothing to do with... Sorry, I've got that wrong, yep. So a package turned up. Tell us what the package was.
I had lunch with a... very, very, senior criminal, but a very dangerous criminal about a week before, and just talking about guns and handguns, and I made a very silly comment. I said, I'd love to have a handgun. I've always loved handguns. I'd just love to have a handgun. And it was just, that was it. And then we moved on to other things. A week later, I got a call from security at Channel 9 to say, there's a guy at the front to see you. And I said, who is it? And they said, he won't give his name. I said, okay. And I said, well, put him on the phone. So they put him on the phone, and he said, I've got that thing. And I said, what thing? He said, the thing you wanted. And I said, but I'm not sure what you mean. He said, and he started getting a bit aggro. So I went outside and I jumped in his car, and he gave me a box. And I opened the wrapping, and it was a American...
Magnum.
police issue handgun with two boxes of bullets. And I crapped myself. I said, I want nothing to do with it. I said, I don't want it. And he said, but you asked for it. And we've gone to a lot of trouble to get it for you. And you have to have it. I said, no, I don't. Ah. I'm not taking it. And I left it with him. And he was not a happy man.
That taught you a lesson, didn't it?
Yeah. Be careful what you say to criminals. He wasn't a happy man.
Now, a man who's been on here, a friend of ours, a man who's been on here and sat where you are, Mick Gatto.
Yep.
Colourful identity, and as I say, he's a friend of ours.
Yep.
You've had interesting association with Mick.
Yeah, interviewed Mick numerous times. Mick's a good guy, and I consider Mick a friend of mine as well. Until you get in a boxing ring with Mick, and there's no friends in boxing rings.
So you got into the ring with him?
Well, I rang Mick, and this was the end of the end of the Underworld War, and... we wanted to do an interview with Mick because, as we all know, that he killed Venuman and was acquitted. And I rang Mick and he said, yeah, sure, come out to the house, meet the boys, bring your boxing gloves. I said, what? He said, bring your boxing gloves. I said, don't have any boxing gloves. He said, well, I've got some here for you. If you want the story, fight me for it.
But hang on, you're small. He's big.
Oh, he's massive.
Why did you get, you didn't get into the ring with him?
Yeah, I did. Well, I got out there. Well, I know. I got out there, and it was all very lighthearted and whatever. And he said, "You got all your gear?" And I said, well, "I have my shorts and the singlet."
Can you handle yourself?
Yes, to a reasonable extent, I can. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like throwing cream puffs at the town hall, having a crack at Mick.
Well, Mick, I said, "Look, I'm going to get changed." Mick has got. Did you go to Mick's house?
No.
Yeah, Mick had this amazing house in Lower Plenty, security everywhere, German shepherds running around, whatever, as you can imagine. And this beautiful big room out the back with a gym, in the middle of the gym, a boxing ring. And I went and got changed in the kitchen, and I poked my head around the corner because I started to get a little bit worried. And there's Mick in his full boxing regalia with his gloves on, banging his gloves together, saying, come on, Marty, come out, get your punishment. Come on, come out, where are you? So I jumped in the ring and he said, I'm not going to hurt you. And he looked at me and he said, you're like a scrawny rat. And I looked at Mick and he was just huge.
Yeah.
Big tummy and massive arms and whatever. And of course, as we all know, Mick was
a heavyweight boxer
and a very, very, very good one, professional. Yeah. So I jumped in the ring and we just had a bit of a muck around. And then, I don't know, Mick is like, it's like those fighter pilots when you jump in their jets, they want to scare you. Or a racing car driver, you know, they want to take you around Sandown and make you, you know, take you through all the moves. Boxers are the same, you know, Mick just danced around the ring and then I thought, this is okay, this is good, this is very good TV, because that's what I was, why I was there. To make
you had camera crew.
Some good TV, yeah, we were filming it.
Anything for the story.
And then the next thing I know, Mick rips one into my ribs. I thought, bloody hell, that hurt. And then he did another one and he ripped about four into my ribs and then I thought I'd better make a bit of a show of this and I whipped a couple into him. And the next thing I knew, I was on the deck. And I think it was a left hook or a right hook or whatever, and I was down. And we jumped up, and I'd actually put a blood tablet in my mouth as a bit of a gag.
Oh.
And I was going to say, Mickey really hurt me, but I didn't need it because when I punched him, I bit my tongue. And I had real blood as well as the fake blood coming out. Anyway, Mick said he was sorry he hurt.
That's the props department at Nine just issuing you with
That's exactly right, yeah. And then Mick said to me, are you okay? And I said, I think you've just rearranged my internal organs, Mick. And I couldn't breathe for a little while. And there's something wrong with my spine.
What, now?
No. I said, there's something wrong with my spine. I think he's actually shifted my spine. Because he's a big man and he can hit very, very hard. So then Mick said, let's go out the back and have a Cuban cigar. So he produces a big Cohiba cigar and some cognac and some salami. And I said, oh, Mick, I'm too sick. I can't eat or smoke or drink. And I went to the doctor later on that afternoon. I had x-rays and he broke four of my ribs. But it was amazing TV.
Love because
it was just a great promo and Channel 9 played it for about a week.
Oh, you're off your head.
So now, Martin, you might find this a strange question. Do you get an adrenaline rush speaking to difficult people who give you nothing and you think, here's a challenge here? Who have been some of the difficult people you've confronted for whatever reason?
Oh, look.
What about celebrities, Martin?
I've never confronted a celebrity. I've interviewed lots of celebrities.
Yeah, but have any of those given you a hard time?
Well, Sir Anthony Hopkins gave me a hard time. He walked out on the interview.
Why?
Because I asked him, they said to me, they rang me and said, what are you doing tomorrow at work? This is in Melbourne. And I said, oh, look, I'm doing this, that, and the other. They said, we want you to go to America. And I said, what for? And they said, to interview Sir Anthony Hopkins. They call them junkets. The stars allow themselves to be interviewed when they've got a movie being released. So he had a movie being released. And also, I think, I also did that day Mel Gibson and Whitney Houston, because she was releasing The Bodyguard and he was releasing some other movie.
World's Fastest Indian, maybe. He was Bert Munro from Invercargill in New Zealand.
Movie. Yes, I love that movie. So I was interviewing him, and all the way over on the flight, I was doing my research, because I'm very particular about
research. John.
Yeah. This is Anthony Hopkins, and every single story I read, there was a reference to him tipping an inkwell as a 14-year-old in school over the kid in front. And there were even quotes about him talking about it. I thought, that's an interesting little thing to ask him. So I asked him, and he cracked the sads. Did he? And walked out of the interview. He said, I'm sick to death of being asked this. I'm not going to continue this interview. I said, okay, well, if that's how you feel, I'll just go back to Australia. And that was a big punt for me to say that, because I didn't want the interview over. So he went into makeup and I went outside and the crew had a smoke. And a couple of minutes later, a woman walked out and she said, Mr. Hopkins would like to see you. So I went into the makeup room and he said, I'm sorry. I apologise. I shouldn't have acted like that. And I said, look, I've done my research and all night long on the plane I haven't slept. And I've got three star interviews today, and you're one of them. And I've done my best, and all I can do is my best. And you know, if you want to react like that, he said, no, let's do the interview again, and let's do it better. and let's do it now.
And he was good?
And he was amazing, absolutely amazing. He was just fantastic.
Are you a junkyard dog at Channel 9? Are you the junkyard dog?
No, people try and put those monikers on you. They used to call me the Silver Fox, the junkyard dog, the hitman, and all that sort of stuff. It's crap.
Well, who else does what you do?
Well, the other reporters do it, not as much as not me. Not as much as me. Look, the first time I ever did what we call a bounce or a walk-in was in a caravan park about 35 years ago in Dandenong. And it was the caravan park owner, the story, and a young couple who had a little baby and they couldn't pay their rent for the caravan. So what did he do? He took the baby's medicine and he withheld it until they paid their rent.
Hang on. What do you mean?
Yeah, well, that's self-explanatory.
So they rang us and said, this guy's taking our baby's medicine. He won't give it back until we pay our rent, but we can't afford the rent.
Oh, you mean the owner of the caravan park?
The owner of the caravan park, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, so we went out to see him and he wouldn't talk to us. So we walked up and confronted him with a camera because it makes good television, it's theatre, it's a bit of magic, whatever. But he gave us nothing and he was just walking around while I was asking him questions. And I was very inexperienced at the time. It was the first time I'd ever done this. And he led us all the way back to his house in the caravan park. And as we got in to his backyard, he picked up a plastic watering can. And Roger Federer would have been proud of this, the best backhand you've ever seen with a watering can, straight into my pickle, into my head. And then a forehand, then a backhand, then a forehand, and then a smash. He absolutely smashed me with his watering can. Well, it made amazing TV. It was very, very entertaining and very funny. I thought it was funny. And it went from there. They said, this guy's good at doing these things. Mike Willis, he loved it. Mike was the host at the time.
So what's the formula for doing what you do? Do you follow a certain procedure?
There's no formula. Look, a story will come up and they will say to you, you know, can you go and front this bloke? And I'd say, well, who is he? How dangerous is he? And if, you know, we'd try and do it somewhere that was not too much on his turf.
Well, this is the formula to what you do. So what are your rules in what you do?
My first rule is to get them in the open. You don't want to get anyone at home because they just shut the door. So you try and get them in the open. Then sometimes it'll get to a stage where they'd be in their home and they wouldn't come out. And these are dangerous people, or these are people who've done the wrong thing. They're not just some
controversial
average
people.
Yeah, controversial people. They're not someone who, you know, is a nice person who maybe has done one wrong thing. They're seriously bad people. And I would drive to the front of their house, go down one house and ring them and say, will you talk to me? And they'd say, no, I'm not going to talk to you. I'd say, all right, well, I'm going to come round. I'll be there in 10 minutes. And they'd come barreling out the front, and then I'd ping them because I was next door. They thought I was back at Channel 9. So they'd come running out to their car, and I'd be just standing there.
So there is a formula.
Fancy meeting you here.
Yeah, there's a formula to what you do, in other words.
A little bit of a formula. Yeah, but every story's different. Tactics, yeah.
So now I haven't had a lot to do with this person, only indirectly because I had her facade on the front of a house of mine in Middle Park. But that's as close as I got to Pamela Anderson. You had a, not a relationship, but you had an encounter with her, did you not?
Yes, well, she came to Australia to promote, I think it was Green M&Ms, and I interviewed her somewhere in a restaurant in Albert Park, and she was a little bit, when someone's had a little bit too much of something, tired and emotional, I think.
Yes.
Now, hang on, what do you mean? She was either drunk or high on drugs?
She's had some analgesics.
Come on, Martin.
I've just got to be a little bit careful
here.
Probably I'd say the latter. It was a very, very strange interview, but during the interview, she, you know what Pamela Anderson's like, she had a very low-cut dress on, and she had M&Ms in her hand and she rubbed them on her breasts and then proffered them to me and said, eat them. These are for you.
She wanted you to eat the M&Ms off her breast, hilarious, Martin.
Yes.
Did you accommodate her?
Yes, I did.
Delightful.
And of course, when I got back to work, they were horrified and said, we can't use that. I didn't they weren't on her breast. She rubbed them on her, can I say nipples?
Nipples, yes, nips.
And hang on, did you take her clothing off?
No. But she had a plunging neckline. You know what she's like.
You're telling me.
She's an exhibitionist, Donald.
She took her bra off, Martin.
I don't think she took her dress off.
No, no, she just put her hand down her front. Do I have to really explain?
Yes.
Well, anyway, yeah.
So she got these M&Ms, put them down her dress, rubbed them around on a nipple, and then gave them back to you.
Yes.
Did they melt in her hand?
No. M&Ms don't melt in your hand, they melt in your mouth.
Yeah.
That might be what she was saying.
Holy shit, Don, please.
Look at Don's face. I love it.
God almighty. She just stopped at the nips, didn't get down any lower at all. No. Well, I was just wondering if she maybe wanted to...
Don's on the floor.
Do you find people, when you confront them, try and con you or smooch you and say you don't... So you go easy on them or... But you see through all that or you don't fall for all that stuff?
Everyone has a different reaction. You're right, Don?
Isn't that funny?
Don's in a fetal position.
Didn't have enough M&Ms for any further down the body, Don.
Yeah, everyone's different, Sam. People react differently. You know, some people will stand there and they will argue with you.
What about when they try to make out that you've got the wrong person? I always think that's a fascinating response.
Yeah, I've actually had that where people say, it's not me. No, I'm not him. Yeah. I'm not him. I say, yes, you are. No, you are. You say, no, I'm not. And then you start to think, maybe it's not him.
Have you ever thought about writing a book on your experiences?
Yes, I have.
Why haven't you done it?
I've just started it, actually.
Have you really? Yeah.
Speaking like one of the Muppets.
Oh, geez, that'd be a ripper. Oh, fuck. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Oh. Weird, isn't he?
Oh, no. That is funny, Martin. You're a funny man.
These are things I remember just from your career. Elle Macpherson was how was Elle Macpherson? She was a she difficult or was she?
Yes, Elle was
what
difficult.
What did you want to speak to the lovely Elle for in the first place?
Elle had been commissioned by Tourism WA to pay $3 million, I think, to promote Western Australia. And we were with her for a week in the outback and Margaret River region, southwest of WA. But after about 3 days, we had nothing with her. She was not interested in playing along with us. So I went up to her and I said, Elle, we've got a problem. The story's not working. And it was in her contract that she had to do media with us. We had the exclusive. She said, what do you want? I said, just play along. Play with me. Just be fun. Be nice. You know, just be normal. And she said, what do you want to do? I said, well, let's just go down the beach and have some fun. So we went down the beach and she started flirting with me. And I said, with a lot of these stories, you don't have to use it on air, but you have to take a punt. If the punt works, it's brilliant. If it doesn't work, you don't use it. So I said to her, this is a very, very beautiful place to propose for marriage. And she said, is that a marriage proposal? I said, yes, it is. Will you marry me, Elle? And she said, I will. So I proposed to Elle on the beach and she accepted. And for about 20 minutes, she turned it on. She was absolutely amazing. We had a fabulous story. And all we needed was 20 minutes of her just being...
Herself?
Well, not even herself, just being... Just playing the game. Just play along. You don't be so buttoned up about it all.
Don't take yourself so seriously.
But she was...
Obviously, you're not intimidated by anybody.
You've intimidated him.
No, I haven't.
No, I don't get intimidated. I'm too...
What's that, because of your upbringing?
I'll prove my upbringing, my
well, you could handle yourself out of the sentimental bloke on a Friday night, could you, with the Fitzroy, the Heidelberg boys.
Yeah, they were tough, those fellas.
Where did you come from?
Bulleen Templestowe.
So here's...
Well, that wasn't a tough area. You must have...
No, not really.
Here's the classic Dorothy Dixer, Martin. All things being equal, who would you like to knock on the door and have a chat to? Did you ever Jeffrey Epstein, did you ever ask if you could go over and speak to him or any political figure in the States, a president?
I'd love to interview Donald Trump. There's a lot of questions you'd like to ask him.
Yeah. So he'd be the sort of person that if you actually rang up, he might accommodate you.
Probably not, I'd say.
Why?
I just don't think he'd do it.
Why?
He's got too much of an agenda.
You intimidated?
I think he's probably intimidated by me.
Or what? You've already got an international reputation.
No. I just, look, I would like to speak to Donald Trump. There's a million people I'd like to
Who else?
Speak to. How long's a piece of string?
Okay, do you come up and say to Channel 9, I'd like to interview them, or do they ring you and say, go and do this job?
Well, these days, because I'm not full-time anymore, I'm on a contract, they ring me and say, look...
Freelance.
Would you like to do this story? And I say, yes or no.
So getting... Okay. So what about personally, Martin? Must be pretty rigorous and... tenuous relationship with the family as far as and your friends, and how do you handle the fact that you're a person that would attract some attention and security and walking around the streets? And do you find that a problem in your life, or you
not really
handle all that?
I've often thought, what's going to happen if I walk in with my family or my partner or whatever to a restaurant or a bar, and someone's in there who I've pinged in the past, but it's never happened. It's never happened. I'm actually surprised it's never happened.
Yeah, but don't you think that the media are kind of a little bit like police, aren't they? You're a protected species. They're a little bit wary of you?
Oh, possibly. I mean, overseas they kill journos all the time, and it hasn't happened here.
Oh.
But, look.
Do you ever try and set people up for a story, for example? There was a car, you set someone up to steal a car.
Oh, yes, the famous stolen car.
Was that just as a sort of an entrapment thing to get a story, or was that legitimate?
No, there'd been, Melbourne had an incredible spate of stolen cars, and we were working with the police on trying to film a car being stolen, and it didn't work. So we thought we'd do it ourselves. So we bought a car, left it in the Broadmeadows car park, railway station car park, and had another car. We fitted the car out with audio and visuals and whatever, and a tracking device. And we sat off the car for 6 months, on and off, not every day, but as much as we could. And I remember one particular day, my boss rang me, the bureau chief, and he said, you're never going to get that car stolen. It's a public holiday. Let's go to lunch. I said, no, I've got a good feeling. I've got a good feeling today. And he said, let's go to lunch. Come on, give it up. I said, I've got to go. The car's being stolen. And right in front of my eyes, this guy walked up, jimmied the window, got in the car and drove away. So we followed him, rang the police, followed him, and he went to Essendon to a house. Then he went inside, the police turned up, went in the house, and the cops walked out and said, you wouldn't believe what's in the house. It's this veritable Aladdin's cave of stolen goods. Huh. And this bloke had been stealing cars for years, and his house and his garage was full of people's possessions, even people who were going overseas. He'd knock off their car, and his garage was full of their suitcases, full of all their clothes and personal possessions.
So how long ago was that? Because
probably 10, 12 years ago.
Because there was a show in the States. It was exactly that. They used to fit up cars with security surveillance equipment in them and trackers, and they used to just park them in areas of America where they thought people might... felons might pinch the cars, and they used to just sit there and watch them, and they used to do it within one or two days, sometimes an hour. But they used to actually leave the keys in the ignition.
So they made that into a television show.
Yeah, they made that into a...
We didn't leave the keys. He hotwired the car. He was a professional car thief. He's also a heroin dealer. He got 3.5 years jail.
Now, Martin,
Now, hang on. He got 3.5 years and he was set up by you.
Well, but he got 3.5 years.
Oh, for his other misdemeanors.
Because all the other misdemeanors, he had so many people's possessions in his house and garage, and yeah, I think he had 15 Malways.
Now, how's Tracy? Tracy Grimshaw, she's the host.
Well. Yeah, she's well.
She's the host, and you've got a good working relationship with her,
yep.
And she enjoys the stories. Does she ever get jumpy about some of them, or she just announces them?
No, Tracy does what she does, and she we don't have a lot to do with her because she's in Sydney, we're in Melbourne, we're a bureau, so we do the stories, send them up to Sydney, and we deal with the executive producer, not so much Tracy.
And it's 35 years you've been at Nine, 40 years, how long?
35, yeah. 36 almost.
Yeah. And you're just cherry pick now what you want to do.
Cherry pick, yeah. And then look, Nine have been very good to me. They ring me and say, would you like to do this? And they accept it if I say no.
Yep.
And I just, you know, I want to do stories that I enjoy doing. I don't want to do the hard yards and the hard work anymore, you know, I just want to do stories that are warm and fuzzy and make people feel good.
Well, Martin,
are you reflecting on a stage in life then, Martin? You think you've done the shit jobs before and now you want to be a good guy?
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes it takes you 3 or 4 weeks to get a story out.
But that mightn't be your forte, being a nice guy.
Yeah, it is.
You think it is?
Yeah, absolutely.
But your forte is it doing these expose interviews?
Yeah, but doesn't make me not a nice guy.
Well, just before Don psychoanalyzes you out of your life, we would like to thank you, Martin King, for coming in here and doing this with us. Unless there's anything you'd like to ask Don about what makes him operate and why he's so diverse and lateral and obscure, unless there's anything you'd like to ask us, anything at all?
Have you met
Don before?
No, I haven't met Don before.
He's an unusual man, isn't he?
Don's very much a character.
He's an unusual man, isn't he?
Yeah, but I like him. Don, he's a good guy.
Don't piss in my pocket.
He's lying back on his seat.
You're a typical television man. You piss in your pocket. You go out the back door and stab me in the back.
And with that note of respect, Martin, we'll wind this up. Thank you very much for joining us, Martin King.
Thank you, Don. Thanks, Sam.
Because you